Good morning and welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines and the stories that make the Elm City tick. Well, folks, it's Pundit Friday. Nothing ticks better than that. We got a full house. It's the WNHH studio with the number one pundits in the media universe.
Yes.
Ready to run down the headlines of the week.
Number seven.
Pundits
the Magnificent Seven.
The belle of our ball, the managing editor of the Inner City News, and the host of WNHH's
Look
Love
at
Babs.
Us all on TV.
Babs Rawls Ivy.
Hey, people.
Like the flyest news hunter-gatherer this side of Fleet Street, star New Haven independent reporter Markeisha Ricks.
Happy Friday, people.
The queen of quippery and quintessence of compassion, La Voz Hispana publisher Norma Rodriguez-Reyes.
Hola.
Back by popular demand, no words from the wear. The Oracle of Beaver Hills, Michelle Turner.
Hey, y'all.
And finally, WNHH station manager and Heavy D Donald Trump devotee, Harry Droz, the bravest man in New Haven. It's crowded here. Is there somebody else here?
Uh-oh. Anybody we need to else? Make room for all the names.
Oh, there is one other person here. One other pundit. The tackler of tempestuousness and titan of temperance. The banisher of bilious bullies. The prince of pleasantries and punctuality. The sorcerer of scientific solution. The blessed beatboxer of banksters and bacchanalians. The righteous reaper of restitution, Mr. Top 2%er. The exalted expostulator of extemporaneous exegesis. The bossa nova mova and shaker griot of the grassy knoll. The driver out of demons, discord, and dissonance. Our executioner of existential enemies, alchemist of assonance and alliteration. Zealous zapper of xenophobia. Yeah. Prize protector against pusillanimity. The deacon of the dozens. The bodhisattva of battle rap. The missionary of modesty, mesmerizer of the masses, shaman of the shoreline, potentate of 360 state, the daring don of dope deliberation, the esteemed elucidator of ebonics, the top tier don from Trinidad and Tobago,
oh,
the daptone deliverer.
It's been a
of
whole
decency,
list since the last time you've been
the
here.
Sanctified slayer of the slow witted, never late for supper, decorated, dazzling, and indefatigable dunker and dryer of the dinner dishes, maximum mixologist Joe Ugly. Of the Joe Ugly Show in the morning.
No.
Wait, Joe. Wait. You know, there's another name for Joe Ugly.
Uh-oh. Harry said I have an addition.
No, he's the squirrel whisperer.
What? Don't forget it.
Now, if you would have heard his show this week, Joe can actually tell the weather by what the squirrels are doing.
Is that a special Trini, like, superpower?
No, actually, it's more of an American superpower.
How does that work, Joe?
No, actually, what I said on my show was we stand a chance to have a heck of a winner because this winter we're going to have, because I saw the squirrels start collecting acorns already, you know, and I was like, usually, and they start off green. Now, I've noticed that. I just pay attention to that a few years back because we had a big tree near the driveway, and I pay attention to it. Now I'm out being a bikey, and I'm on the trail.
A bikey.
Not a biker. It doesn't have a motor on it.
So a bikey.
He is still the reigning king of conspiracy concoction.
There you go.
And please get
close
to my show.
But most important, though, aside from all of that, thanks. I'm not happy that you cut my title short.
You know, this is only a 45-minute show.
When it got past 60 titles.
Did it?
Yeah.
It did.
But I got them all written down and saved, and we do greatest hits.
Oh, great.
Along with new ones. Speaking of conspiracies, folks, conspiracies are running wild in New Haven this week.
Is it?
After the scandal du jour.
The scandal.
This was a hilarious one. So you got this race for probate judge, right?
Right.
This guy, Americo Cartier. He's petitioning his way on the ballot.
Yes.
And he makes it because it's hard. They had only 2 weeks. I think the rules are completely scandalously written. You get only 2 weeks to petition on the ballot to get 1,872 validated signatures to be on a citywide ballot. For a Democratic primary, I just think that's just saying, please don't run unless you're already like a big shot insider, which is contrary to the whole point. Right. So you should have to get some.
And that's what happened to Tony Harp, remember?
Right, she had to get him because they forgot. But she had the whole Unite Here
apparatus,
staff would go out and get him. I mean, I think you should have to make some kind of barrier because you have to show it costs money to run an election and you don't want to waste everyone's time if it's just going to be you and your upstairs neighbor maybe voting and running an election. We do get that in some elections. And I actually think it's too few signatures for the general election. You can run for alder with 3 signatures. And there's actually a candidate in the Hill who barely made it. She handed in 10 and 6 got denied because they didn't live in her ward. So only four were good. So I think that we go to extremes in New Haven. But anyway, so this guy Carsey gets his ballot, his name's in, his name's on the ballot. Then all of a sudden said, you know, some of these pages look fishy on the petitions. I went down to look at them. And there were entire pages of 20 names with the exact same handwriting as all their printed name and their address. And all their addresses were Yale dorms that are empty all summer. And then it turned, and then scribbled signatures. And then it turned out that some of them hadn't been in New Haven for 5 years. One of them was in Japan. I contacted them. I was in Japan. I never signed any petition. It turned out that page after page of petition was obviously fraudulent. And they had hired a firm out of Bristol, a new company called Yellow Dog Strategies, co-started by a 27-year-old guy who previously worked for Joe Gannon's mayoral campaign and the son of this lawyer you see in all the TV commercials, John Heyman. His name's Cole Heyman. Anyway, they hired these kids from Bridgeport, and they just filled up all the pages. So at least I counted 59 pages circulated by these Bridgeport circulators, which is more than half of it, about half of the signatures he brought in. So there's no way he was going to make it. So we had a lot of drama for one day, and then he dropped out of the race finally yesterday. And you can't be a judge breaking the law to be gotten on the ballot. At least we can caught breaking the law. Let me amend that, because this is
New
Haven.
Who caught him?
Well, we wrote the first story. Everyone else was looking at it, and the Register of Voters had a hunch and wrote something to the state. And then we
never
went
mind
in.
Them. You broke it.
Well, yeah, we broke the story. We found the We found the first...
That's all I care about.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Okay. Anyway, but now the conspiracy is going on. And here's where I know I go too much in the opposite of Joe, because I know there are conspiracies, but I tend to think usually it's incompetence rather than conspiracy. So some have claimed, people on the Independent are claiming that people in the party steered this candidate to a firm they know would break the law so that his candidacy... And then people really believe this. Smart people are saying, let's get the mom this. And I just think that's absolutely ridiculous, because A, it would not be in the interest of anybody to recommend a friend's firm so that friend could have
like,
his
I know
career.
This friend is...
But also this friend's career is now, they're freaked. This company, they're worried. We just started in April.
Yeah.
We might not ever get hired again, and we're going to be caught for breaking the law because they know they broke the law. And so I don't know why... Help me out with this, Joe, because you're the conspiracies and FBI conspiracies.
No, let's be very clear. First of all, with this conspiracy nonsense that you put in that tag on me, first and foremost, squirrels collecting a bunch of acorns does
but weren't
reflect
they also
a
collecting
long
signatures?
Winter,
I saw those squirrels with little pens.
Okay, so let's be very clear.
Squirrels with little pens.
Okay. Were those squirrels collecting signatures for Amerigo Cartier?
You're a mess, man, but I love it. But, you know, that's not a conspiracy, man. That is just, I mean, that's not a... pie in the sky thing. That's real. That's not, yeah, like I said, that's not a conspiracy. That's real. Somebody over here, all of a sudden, you got the same names as
you got all those people who could know way of, like anyone who knows that Yale isn't around in the summer. So people who
are red flag.
And some of them even graduated. I mean, they say that they could have filled out these.
Okay, let's just say even if this individual was steered to that firm, shame on that individual for not doing a background on the firm.
But even
that he's
the person, the theory is that party leaders steered him there so he'd lose. But why would a party leader set up a friend's firm to
even
get in trouble
and direct
them to break the law so they could get caught? That's just too many levels.
Exactly. But even if, why didn't this individual do due diligence?
Because he wasn't ready for prime time.
There you go.
Okay, but
boom!
Wasn't ready for a Paul Bass investigation.
But here's the question, folks. So let's say, if it's not conspiracy, I still think there are legitimate questions here. So obviously this guy's at fault. You shouldn't do things sloppy. This happens a lot. Anthony Williams, I remember running for mayor in Washington, had the same problem where they hire a firm, and because they got paid by the signature, they padded it, and then they all got thrown out. And in this case, though, it turns out that at least some of the people who did the fraudulent petitions were kids who were volunteering for a friend from Waterbury, from a friend from the firm. So it wasn't that they had an incentive to make money, which I think is one of the problems with the ballot access process. But is the other problem, do you think, that it's an unrealistic number in 2 weeks for most people to get? Or is that just making excuses for people who want to bend the rules?
No, it is. And here's why it's an unrealistic number. Because the reason I have a problem with that, 2 weeks, you're looking at only 2 weekends. You get rain on one of those weekends. You're down to 1 weekend. If you have people are working during the week, to get signatures from people who are working is impossible. You try to go out there.
Well, you go out to the events at night. You're not. It's really hard.
No, it's a lot of hard work. People do it.
I mean, Marcus Packer did it.
Yeah.
And so did, you know, in the past years, Clifton Grazer and Hanford Mayor did it. Jeffrey Kariki's did it.
Yeah.
It can be done.
But it's so hard. And
what's the public interest reason of having it be only 2 weeks?
why it was even harder for this particular candidate is because he never held public office before. Right. And he was really, and he's like, I need to do it quickly. So this is the first time he's really dipped into the actual world of politics and getting elected.
But yeah, so he doesn't have that apparatus of people around him.
For that. No, Norm, I don't feel sorry for that, because if you're going to go in, you have to talk to people who know what they're doing, which he did, and they didn't know as much as they're doing as he thought. But I do think there shouldn't be barriers so that if you're new, it's hard for you to get involved. But I don't think there's a problem with expecting candidates to know what you're doing, because they're also going to take over a job where we want them to know what they're doing.
But could that be, exactly, could that be, it's not so much that you're being barred from doing a job, but it's a process for you to learn that if you're going to be doing this job, especially as probate judge, which is about details, you're making decisions on people's lives in detail. That job alone should tell you, okay, if I'm going into it, I'm going to do this in detail. I'm going to go and investigate where these numbers are, what this firm is, not even these numbers or the signatures.
Families and what to do with the kid.
Exactly. This is some serious stuff.
But you know what? He has 20 years experience doing judge probate.
He is a lawyer.
There's a big difference between being a judge of probate, which he has the experience, as running for political office. Those are two different worlds.
Why are we electing a probate judge? Why should we elect a probate judge?
Why not?
We don't elect other judges because you want judges not to be elected based on who's best at pressing the flesh, but who understands the law best and can do it best. Other people say in other places where they elect judges, you get people kowtowing to string them up type mob mentality.
Yeah,
big contributors.
State of Alabama has that real problem where judges are elected, so they're more likely to deliver a death sentence verdict and overturn a jury that says life in prison because they're elected judges and that's what they're constituents want.
So, you know, I think Norm is right that if you've been a lawyer for 20 years in the field, you should know the law.
You should know something, but still, and that's even a word.
But I can't figure out why Joe hasn't pointed out the real conspiracy in this case.
Well, I didn't even know
the signature gatherers who did the fraud were from Waterbury. There is one man in this room who sleeps every night in Waterbury. Harry Trost, what's the connection?
I don't see any connection to me, but
I see
a few squirrels running in front of my lawn. So maybe you have something there. They were collecting signatures.
I don't want to say that. I do think squirrels are fascinating. When I'm walking, I'll stop and watch a squirrel, what he's up to.
Squirrels kind of creep me out.
How come? Because they're rats with tails.
They're just, and they're cunning, right? Like they try to bait you. And they like to play chicken in the street. You're like, you're stupid. You're going to die. What are you doing? This is a car.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm just going to say this and then I'm going to change off. But let me just tell you something. A squirrel crossing the street, I have no mercy.
I know people have tuned into pundits and said, what am I listening to?
No, well, you are listening to Friday Pundits on WNHH Radio. You're home for Community Radio 103.5 FM, live stream at newhavenindependent.org.
Can I just say?
And we're here with the best pundits in the universe.
Can I just say my reasons before the animal rights get at me? And the reason I have no mercy for squirrels is because they have trees and high wires that they could cross the street on. So if they decide to come down and create an accident, something got to give. That's all.
Squirrels are outsmarting all of us. Now, who was outsmarting whom and who was playing fast and loose at the Senior Center in East Shore this week? Marquisha's went over there because Marcus Pacca is running for mayor, and he was going to speak at the Senior Center, and he'd set it up in advance. He had a Channel 8 crew, and the director told him, you can't come in. Fishy, or what do you think, Marquise?
It didn't.
And what happened?
So ultimately, by the time I got out to the East Shore Senior Center, Marcus was in full-on campaign mode. So he was getting his talk in with a group of about 20 older women who were at the Senior Center ready to play bingo. But the initial squabble was that he had set up an appointment about 3 weeks ago to be able to speak at the Senior Center. But apparently the city has a rule that if you are going to speak in a senior center, if there's going to be press coverage involved, that you need to notify them in advance. Now, what's unclear to me is whether that was communicated when he made his appointment. He's spoken at the Dixwell New Hallville Community Center. But I don't think he's had press with him in previous.
But why should press be the matter? Press are members of the public. So, Joe has a Facebook, a phone. Joe's not in the press.
Was explained to me was that you want to give these seniors who, depending on how they roll to the senior center, the opportunity to comb their hair if they haven't done that, so they don't feel embarrassed or have a TV camera stuck in their face. And I know something about not wanting a TV camera stuck in my face, but That's
so is the issue Shay. TV? Because let's say someone...
No, it's not just specifically for TV. It is for all media coverage.
So why... let's say there's no quote-unquote
I'm not saying it's a good policy. I'm just telling you
I'm
what
sorry.
The policy is.
I don't mean to argue with you, Marquise. I'm just thinking out loud. Because I do think you bring up a good point that you want to have respect for the seniors who are there. The question is, A, I am very skeptical that they told Marcus 3 weeks in advance you have to have checked in if there's any TV coming with you. Second of all, now we are in a new era. So let's say there's no quote-unquote media. Let's say there's Billy, the campaign aide, or Joey, the son-in-law of the senior there. They're going to have a phone. They're going to take pictures. They might put it on Facebook Live, and the whole world will see it. Goes viral. I think these rules about media are really arbitrary.
And I agree that it can be TV's gonna arbitrary. Come up, and not just that. Like, so Marcus spoke, and I was inside when he spoke. But... His wife is recording it for Facebook Live for his constituents.
Right.
So everybody's getting it.
Yeah.
So either the city needs to revise its policy if it's going to have that policy, or it needs to kill its policy.
You can ask people when they come in, hey, if you bring a TV, give us a heads up. And when TV showed up, they could have said, hey, can you wait outside for 5 minutes? Hey, anyone, comb your hair. I don't think they were working with them.
I don't disagree.
It sounds like in both cases, the previous story we just discussed and this one, that folks still aren't clear on what it takes to do certain things when it comes to running for a particular office.
Wait, a candidate, 3 weeks ago, he had no idea Channel 8 was going to be following him that day. When you're a candidate for office,
you usually alert the press when you're going to
Well,
do
he doesn't
something.
Alert the press to events. I mean, I think that's something I'd actually criticize his campaign for. We call him to cover.
Mm. So how did Channel 8 know that he was going to
they
be
They asked
there?
If they could follow him around for a day because they're doing a story in the campaign,
well,
which
there
I think
you
is
go.
Cool. Which is cool. I don't think he did anything wrong.
I don't think it's not so much that he did anything wrong. I just think that at a certain point, somebody has to alert somebody else and say, hey.
See, so I disagree. I think here's where I disagree with this. When you're running for office, the part of running for office is media coverage. So wherever you show up, the media could well be there.
True that.
Now, the grounds have changed a bit now because everybody's the media if you have a smartphone of some sort. So that becomes its own sort of way to get information out. I think, you know, the city has to sort of come into this new century.
Yeah, 21st century, folks.
Come into the 21st century on what media is, because they have this archaic understanding of what media is, and media has evolved and changed, and it's ever evolving as people become their own harbingers of media. Mm-hmm.
So talking about media, I've been trying to learn how to do Facebook Live. I'm really bad at it, but the youngins have been teaching me, and I did the debate. There was a great debate between Marcus Pack and Tony Harp for mayor at Varick Church last weekend. We're going to have a debate that the independent LaVosa are sponsoring in a couple weeks. But I don't think we're going to do as good a job as those ministers did asking questions. They asked really tough questions to both of them. And I was taken, you know, aside from the merits of the two arguments, I was taken with how much on his game Marcus Paco was. He really was toe-to-toe with Tony Harp in that
debate. Why were we surprised? If you're running for mayor, you should be on your game.
Because I've covered so many campaigns, and there's usually a bunch of bozos that go up there next to the incumbent, and you're feeling sorry for them.
I mean, I think there have been some good folks running for this particular office.
Definitely, no question.
Over the years,
and 2013
but,
was. An
but
exception.
I mean, I think we're in this era of such low expectations.
You're right. Look at last time. Last time was a comedy show.
But you know, like
Norma, can you get the mic?
What people are not mentioning here?
Get the mic, girl.
You know, what was his position before he decided to run for mayor? What was it?
He was the labor relations chief of the city.
Labor relations. So if you are in charge of labor relations, that means that you dominate a lot of topics within the city. And I personally think it's really sad that here these people were best friends. Okay?
They weren't best friends. They were friendly. He was friendly with her grandma. The mayor was friendly with grandma.
She gave him the job, you know? Yeah. She hired him as labor relations with no experience previously. And which is not the first time that someone is getting hired with no experience, because Fernandez, who was the development administrator, right? Henry Fernandez?
Yeah.
He had no prior experience as a
And sometimes people do well. They rise to the occasion.
Yes, they do. So, you know, but I personally think it's really sad that we have these two individuals running against each other when at one time I thought
they
were friends.
See, when I talk about how media changes things, so in this debate, sanctuary cities came up.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some issues that are going to be very tough for Tony Hart because he's an incumbent. This is going to be a tough issue for Marcus Packer. Mm-hmm. Because he's somewhat trying to get votes from people who don't like Tony Harp, and there are some people in the black community, not at all the black community, who are very much against Sanctuary City. And but the
really?
No question, it's always been. They say they're taking our jobs.
Idea. Yeah, yeah. What jobs are they taking?
New Haven, yeah, I agree. But in New Haven, there's been much more support in the black community than most other parts in America for sanctuary policies, pro-immigrant policies, but there's still that divide. So he's kind of straddling that issue the way that Tony Harp has to straddle other issues. So it came up for the first time when the ministers asked him. What was interesting, so his position was nuanced. He said, I can't say yet whether I'll turn down a federal grant if that means signing on to the Trump administration, say you can't be sanctuary city. He said, I do have to be more responsible than I think you're being about jeopardizing public money. So instantly, an activist in the crowd, Aaron Good, tweeted this. And instantly, this got onto social media with the activists. And Marcus, to his credit, was on social media right after the debate responding to the critics. But he didn't feel comfortable because as a candidate, you never had control as a candidate of what the media writes. But now you even far less control because you can't just talk to reporters and try to help them understand where you're coming from and how it comes out. There are 300 people in a church all with cell phones. And it instantly got, and he got his awakening because every candidate, when you're running, you're for the first time, you're caught by surprise by the politics, something you didn't know about the politics. He knew that the majority feeling in the activist community in New Haven is for the immigrant rights position. But and he was trying to say, I'm for immigrants' rights, I'm for welcoming, but I'm not for, and this is Joe Gannon was saying the other day, I'm not for necessarily jeopardizing public money. But he got slammed on that one in the way that new media worked. And I just found that interesting. He got some really good points in there. There was a great debate about gentrification that mirrored the debates we have on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Harp took the position I've often taken that it's not actually gentrification because you're not tearing down any buildings, you're not pushing anyone out, but you're actually building up the tax base. You might be opening up older buildings that now people who can afford to go in now. Marcus Pack took the equally legitimate position that you folks, Joe Ugly especially, but Babs and others have taken on the show, that in fact we are having a larger kind of sense of gentrification where it's too expensive to live in New Haven. All this housing getting built right now is luxury housing, way too expensive for most New Haveners out of reach. And then the Tony Hart position is that that's actually going to make more affordable housing available. We're building that too. And as long as we're not pushing out anybody the way they do in New York, we're trying to convert buildings, but building on vacant land, we're building up the tax base. And then Packer comes back and says, I'm going around the city. You're tone deaf. People, this is a crisis and we got to deal with it. And Tony Harp's coming back and saying, the crisis isn't related to the new housing we're building. So it's a really great debate. And this is why we want to have mayoral campaigns. And like, I see your guys' brains working right now furiously taking this in and trying to see where you stand on it. How important is this issue going to play out, do you think? The affordable housing / gentrification vampire issue in this campaign?
I mean, this is a real issue in the sense that people feel like it's a real issue. But, you know, at the end of the day, we having been a legislator and being concerned about a budget, we want businesses to come in and not have to shake us down for tax credits or tax rebates or any of that stuff. We want people to come in with their own money and sort of and do what they do in this city, talk to community.
And we have this flood now of new building for apartments. It's hot and we're not giving them tax breaks.
Right.
And so that's something we tried to do with tax breaks, couldn't even do in the past. So the question is the goose that lays the golden egg, or we make a New Haven just for rich people? The other thing that no one ever talks about because it's politically difficult to talk about, a quarter of our city is on subsidized housing. So some people say we take most of it to region. Why don't we have a mix? But then other people come back and say the mix you're getting now is rich and poor and nothing in between.
But you know, you look at the wonderful work that the Housing Authority has done with this mixed income. The days of low income housing in these large, dense places are done. We're not going back to those days of high rise apartments and lots of low income people warehoused in a particular part of a city. Those days are behind us.
And they should stay there because what those create, you might have neighborhoods. Those are neighborhoods. We need more communities. And mixed income, mixed cultures, that creates community. And that's one of the things that will help the city grow. And as the mayor said, it's not changing the structure of housing in the city of New Haven, because as you said, and the mayor, it's not buildings that being torn, you know, taken away from people.
But I mean, none of us is an expert. So just because you have an opinion doesn't mean we're necessarily right or wrong. Marcus Packer might be totally right that people will get priced out of the market, that other rents will rise. I mean, this is really a little bit almost like religious belief on both sides. Some people say if you're building all this market rate housing, all rents will rise to compete in the market. Other people say you're going to have a glut of the market like we did in the 80s with the condos, and in fact, other rents will go down at those middle-level buildings that used to have the higher rents, but like Strauss Adler.
But as Bab said, you know, if you're making these mixing, like for example, in my building, for example, there are people at an affordable housing rate. You have
360 State has a couple floors of public housing, and the rest is for 2%ers like yourself.
But as long as you make it to where people, these buildings, the developers are coming in and they, you know, want to create these buildings, you make sure that a part of the plan have to be for...
Right, so that's been sort of the new approach. So at Chersey South, they're tearing it down. They're going to build it back to 900 to 1,000 units, and they've made the developers guarantee that 300 of those units will be low-income. And that's the number of units we lost when you tear down affordable housing.
Sense.
They're building on 11.6 acres in the hill. Again, hundreds of new apartments. They're putting a 20% affordable. So that's, you know, as long as state money doesn't disappear.
I mean, affordable is sort of such a, it's such a tricky thing because, you know, what's affordable? What makes sense? Right. In this room, what is an affordable
that's true,
number?
But
see, I'm still in 1980s. I believe income. 100 a month for rent is like...
Paul, let's be
Paul
clear.
You had to join us in the 21st century.
Yes.
Let's be clear about that, Paul. I don't think it's affordable. I think it's low income. And there is a difference.
I actually think Babs is right. It's workforce housing. We're doing the low income. I think what Marcus is hearing is from people who do have jobs. There's many people doing public housing.
Right.
Who make like an okay amount of money,
right?
But they feel, and I think there's no question that Marcus is right. I don't think Tony Harper disagreed with this, that people are getting priced out of New Haven. And what are we going to do about that? So there's a guy named Juan Salas-Ramer. He doesn't get the big headlines except Markeisha covered his groundbreaking.
I do cover his groundbreaking.
He doesn't do the big glitzy projects with his $3,000 a month. He does what's called workforce housing, where you don't qualify for public housing, but you're just kind of above. You're like $80,000 a year, $70,000 a year for a household, mm-hmm. or $60,000, $50,000 for an individual. And you can't qualify then for some of the mixed income, but there's a huge waiting list for public housing. But especially if you got kids and that kind of money, you can't afford the new Haven except for the subsidized units. And this guy's building like on Munson Street, the old Cardinals Club project, which I don't know what you think, Marcus. I think that's a really good project. And I think that's the kind of housing
we need. Smaller scale than, say, your
and
Winchester
Loft. And it's in between the Monterey public housing and the Winchester Loft's 3,000 a month.
It's like a mid-range, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if the new housing that's coming to, say, Munson Street, where next to the Hameen's house.
On Science Park Lane.
Yeah. So, and whether that'll be comparable, like whether there'll be somewhere in between. Like when I came to New Haven, so I moved from the Washington, D.C. area where everything is incredibly expensive. But I was so surprised to move to New Haven and find that the cost of renting an apartment by myself was going to be practically the same.
Wow.
In terms of pricing.
As Washington.
And I wasn't even living in Washington, D.C. proper. I lived in Northern Virginia. I lived in Alexandria.
Were you near a subway station?
Technically, yes, but I had
think
a car.
That's where the rents are highest.
I had a car. And technically, my rent was kind of low. I was in the 1,100 range for a studio. But like to live by yourself here in New Haven, you're going to have to cough up $1,000 or more.
Marcus Packer brought up a passing because you only have 2 minutes to talk in these discussions. It's a really interesting point that I think we'll be exploring in further debates, which is micro apartments. So he actually didn't talk about micro apartments.
Micro apartments are like prison.
He talked about micro housing, actually.
To be honest.
So some of the new projects they want to build, especially downtown.
I don't like micro apartments.
And some of these are going to be really expensive, like on Dwight Street.
People living like rodents.
It's 300 to 400 square feet.
Oh, my
Tony
God!
And Tony says that's living like rodents. But there's also a micro housing idea in New Hallville. You have all these vacant lots, the ones that aren't community gardens. Mm-hmm. And Eric Johnson promoted this when he was at Livable City Initiative. His thought was that you do build, you have a little land around it, a house of like 600 square feet. But it's your own place. You have some room there, and you can afford to buy a house you wouldn't otherwise buy otherwise.
600 square feet is a lot different from
300
square
for an apartment,
feet, especially if you have like a you know those
a
high
little
ceilings
yard or something.
Yeah, no, but even if you have high ceilings, but you can go in and IKEA have to set up where you could have like you could create like a loft / living area, so you could double the space and expand it that way.
Or maybe
way.
Instead of bunk beds, you could have a bunk with like the kitchens on the top, the
no,
bathrooms on the bottom.
They have those. They have those, and that,
really?
You know, yeah.
I was joking.
No, I'm dead serious. Yeah, they have.
What are you saying, Michelle?
The Swedes are very efficient.
First of all, I live in that neighborhood, Munson Street, Henry, et cetera, et cetera. And
the one thing I can say about the coming gentrification is that it has changed it into a real neighborhood. You do see kids playing on the street. You do see people, you know, taking care of their properties, all of that. But at the same time, what is happening is slowly people are coming into the neighborhood and they're buying things. They're buying from the previous tenant. So now Henry Street is beginning to look more and more Caucasian. And
it's
you get this strange
action here.
Yeah, you get the strange looks like when you walk down the street and it's like, hold up.
I live here. I was here first.
I was here first. You know, and the majority of the people that live on this street were here first.
Can I ask you something about kids playing? I thought the well-kept properties of kids playing had to do with the revival of Monterey Place, the old Helm Haven.
I think it's spilled over.
There's a mixed income there, and they really keep it property up there. And, I mean, it's really nice there. And you have, and it used to be like the, that used to be hell in New Haven.
Yeah.
Back in our day.
Yeah, back in the day.
And I, that's such a large part of that area.
But, you know,
I'm not at all disagreeing with what you're saying, what's happening right now at the tipping at the edge
of
Henry
Street. It's a real,
with
yeah,
people
it's
buying
a
their
tipping
property.
But there's also, there's still some gang activity. And so, you know, what is going to happen with this gentrification and the gang activity? You know, now you got to figure out a way to get people to feel safe at night. It's not so much feeling safe during the day as it is feeling safe at
so
night.
So here's the skeptic in me, because I covered a whole round of this in the 80s and 90s. I believe that often these aspirations to become all gentrified and yuppie makes investors lose a lot of money, which they then write off. And we just get some better housing in the process. We had all these new condos built for rich people in Fairhaven along the waterfront. They all went bust and they became Section 8 / middle class housing and in the annex. I'm wondering, like, they tried to have a Whole G Bakery, nice place in that area, right where you're seeing on Henry, and it didn't work because there weren't enough people and it wasn't the right market. And it was a little bit too far from what you left. I'm wondering whether this, whether 3,000 a month rents are really going to work on Winchester Avenue long term. And what will happen instead is the New York Brooklyn developer who built that will have a write off. And in fact, they'll become really nice $1,500 a month apartments.
I do have a question about that. Somebody asked me this and I didn't know the answer to it with Winchester Lofts. Are they planning to build out the rest of that building?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, the plan originally was,
because it seems
yes.
like you want the higher rents to maybe pay for the build out of the other part, but if you can't get the rents, if you can't fully 100% rent that side.
That's a good question to watch, because they promised they were going to do the second half.
Because, yeah, I had someone ask me that question. And
I miss Hattie's at the park over there. I miss Hattie's.
Hattie's at the park is now a gym. you can peep through the curtains.
Oh, that's right.
There,
I used to love to go there.
It's
just
that was a good
Saturday
place. That's where the
morning
politics was happening.
Yes. Yeah. You'd just be
but
right
now
in
it's
it.
Happening on Pundit Friday on WNHH Radio, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. We're running down the headlines with the best pundits in the media universe. Now, one other last, there aren't going to be as many primaries as we thought, but it turns out it's game on for the mayoral primary, which is bigger than we thought. There won't be a probate judge. Most of the older races, with a few exceptions, are in the general election, which is we're moving to in New Haven, which is kind of interesting. But it turns out the busiest race with the most candidates is an award where almost nobody ever votes. Matter of fact, we're wondering whether there's going to be more candidates or more voters in this race. It's Ward 30. West Rock divides it in half, West Hills and West Rock. Marquise Ricks has been all over this race. So why do we have three candidates, and they seem like really interesting characters?
They do. And so yesterday I got to meet, and there will be a story about this with
it's up now. Yeah.
Oh, it's up now. Okay, with Charlie Delgado, who is the third. So the current alder is Michelle Sepulveda, because she was appointed to fill out Carlton Staggers' term.
And she was an alderman with me when I served.
Right, okay,
she used to be an alder.
Yeah, former alder.
She retired. She's come back to fill out a term. She's running again.
Yeah. And then you have Tasha James Golson, who is the wife of Darnell Golson, who used to be an alder in that ward.
And I grew up with
everyone
Darnell.
Does think that that's significant, because Darnell's a former alder there and a current board ed person, mm-hmm. very prominent public person. This is her first foray into public life. But like, I always wonder as a journalist, how much do we bring that in? For instance, yeah. Jill Marks, wife yeah. of Scott Marks, community organizer. I actually felt, and I don't know if I was wrong, that that merited only one very brief mention, mm-hmm. that she'd been very active in the community already. Scott Marks didn't really have a lot to do with Ward 28 Beaver Hill politics. So right or wrong, I didn't think that was the defining aspect. For some reason, including they, I think that this is maybe a little more relevant in this case, and I can't figure out why.
at least for me, it's relevant because it's interesting political fodder, right? In the sense that
family
it's family dynasty type stuff. Michelle Sepulveda, her family was very active politically.
Well, she's Reverend Edmonds' daughter.
Exactly. And so Charlie Delgado has a Scott Marks connection. He is
New Haven Rising.
New Haven Rising.
Everyone's wondering, is there going to be Unite Here candidate in this race or not? Which is easy to watch.
And he hasn't been endorsed by them at all. Like he was upfront with me. He's like, you know, I support the union. I don't have an endorsement from them. But he and Scott Marks' son are very close best friends.
So this
friends.
Is what's to watch.
And he also is so Charles food. Ash's grandson,
which is another political family.
Yeah,
dynasty.
Another political. So you have like
the most
so you have people.
In
I think
biz.
What's interesting about this race is you have people this time who can turn people out. They know how to get people out to vote. The question is, can they do it in this
was
ward?
Was it 40 something people voted?
What? He said it was. He told me it was 54.
54. Because one race they had in West Rock, one election, we had Alan Appel, the reporter, go down to find out. Because they have two polling places because of the crazy system where you have to have teams of poll workers, even in wards where no one votes much, in two different locations. So in the West Rock polling place, Alan Appel went to cover that day primarily to report hour by hour when the first voter was going to show up. By 11 a.m., there had been 7 wild turkeys crossing the polling place and 0 humans. I think it was around 1 p.m. when the first person has to cast a vote, but we're paying for 2 teams of poll workers. But now we've got 3 candidates running. So if on first glance, you have someone who, and again, we're going to say it, is like married to someone who was the alder, is very involved in politics, has a lot of connections. We have somebody who's been an alder, comes from a political family. So you think they have the upper leg versus a 21-year-old recent college graduate who's running for the first time.
Is he Latino?
He's not. Or at least, I know. I don't know as far as
same
his father.
Michelle,
his father might be
Michelle
Latino. I'm not sure.
He's not Latino either. But if Unite Here backs her, Unite Here, which is
backs
the most,
him?
Him, I mean. It's the biggest vote pulling force in town. They really control Darren Gepardo Party and the Board of Alders. And they have almost no other candidates. The only other competitive race which they're going to care about is Ward 19, and that candidate's in who they're going to want there. So if they really care at all about that seat, they could flip that over. Or maybe it's a test of whether their influence extends to such a non-voting ward.
Well, I mean, that's if they're going to have some influence, that would be the ward to do it because that's such a low voting.
And then Michelle Sepulveda, how many of her relatives live on her street?
So that was, she grew up with like 23 of her first cousins on the same street on, I think it's West Rock.
So the number of
relatives. They don't live there now. Okay. We had to correct that. Sorry,
so
guys.
So why do so few people vote? And now it's largely public housing, not completely. But
so Michelle's theory was that, not this
Obama
Michelle.
Ain't running.
There's that. But her other theory was that, you know, the. When there was the old Brookside that got torn down and now like, and so those folks went away for a little while and then the new Brookside. So there, some people came back. So Charlie Delgado actually,
the old Brookside. I mean, the Jenkins family,
I don't know.
I mean, Mae Jenkins used to have an operation that Brian Jenkins and Portia grew up doing to pull votes in Brookside. So they knew some people.
So I think what's interesting about that is that Charlie Delgado lives in Brookside right now. He is a resident of Brookside, and he was a resident of the old Brookside, and so he had to leave when they tore it down, but he's back, and he lives in the neighborhood. So he might have that advantage of being a neighborhood guy, like or in, specifically in
we
that housing
hang
complex.
With them on election day and see where the votes come from.
It might be a good idea to hang
so
out with him.
So what's the, oh, never mind. I don't even want to know. Because there's still parts of the West Rock community that's
not developed yet,
right?
Correct.
But you know what's very interesting?
Norma, can you get the mic?
So does that make that a us-them kind of division? You know, do they, you know, what has changed with the housing?
Big change.
Have people's perspectives, you know, the issues that were facing them are not facing them now, right? So they have housing that's new and community
and
inspired.
There, yeah.
So even though, I mean, that one homicide that happened early in May where the woman was like tied up and murdered, like that's Charlie mentioned that when he talked to me.
That wasn't on that side though.
Yeah, it was on the new side.
It was on the new side. So that
was on the
no, it's not on the old
units,
side.
But, you know what about
but it really, he said it shook that community up, and
it did shake the community up. But the thing is that it was believed, it hasn't been proved yet, that was two people who knew each other. Now, you never know until an arrest is made, but then it's hard to tell.
And there's some heartburn over the fact that there's no arrest has been made.
Babs raised a heck of a point. Let me make sure I understand. Were you saying that because they're new housing that people will not want to show up to vote? Because they now don't have
they got what they want
the
or
no does that make them more invested in the neighborhood?
Well, you would think that, but maybe their issues are not so critical, you know.
When you're not, when something bad happens, it could motivate you, but they never showed up when you're it was not a pit.
But the problem, well, that comes from the, who's the older person over there right now, the current older person?
Michelle just took over.
She just took over, but prior to that, it was Carlton
Staggers.
It is
important to let people know when things are good. That's the time that you show up and you make a voice to maintain.
Well, there's not organizing being done. There's not organizing. And I'm sorry I cut you off, Babs. I think you had a really good question. Mm-hmm. Is what motivates people to vote when things are not so good or when they have a stake they want to protect?
Interesting because when I was alderman of my ward, and my ward is one of the highest voting wards in the city, and nothing has changed about that neighborhood. There's no there's no issues that are, you know, there's no new housing. There's none of that.
But you got hundreds of new Orthodox Jewish families moved in the last couple of years.
Well, now, but they vote. I mean, they go vote. So it's not.
That's not an issue whether or not they vote.
Yeah, they vote. So what is it about that particular community that says we take voting seriously and we vote in large numbers no matter what the election is?
Because
it's a middle class
community.
You live in a middle class community. A lot of people own their homes. The kind of people who...
Paul, that's a matter of information. I think people need to understand the power of trying to maintain what they have versus about trying to obtain what you don't have. And that's the importance that people must understand.
But it seems like on either side of that value, they still don't vote. And so the question is, how do you get those people engaged in the political process?
I think understanding that, it has to be more than just your housing. What about your schools now? What about your streets being clean? What about there are other things that you must try to maintain and grow.
But could it be given that where those places are and how disconnected they are from the city?
Right,
like that they feel like it doesn't matter. Like people just do whatever out here and we don't have a say.
But now the things are changing, as Bab said. You need to build on that and let them see their importance. My point is, it was systematically done, in my opinion, conspiracy. It was systematically done to make people feel disconnect from the city.
The squirrels did a joke.
You know?
Oh, public housing is historically that it's not supposed to be. It's always on the outskirts of town or in places where they thought
like
would not be developed.
New Haven's been unique in that it has had so much public housing in the city proper, downtown, in places where...
Well, that's because downtown was not thought of as a destination.
Yeah.
Right.
And once the shift became the destination,
this housing got
and Yale said, we want to expand out. So it was a whole different kind of conversation between business, town-gown relations. So once you start shifting that, thinking about, oh, look, we have a train station that could really be a focus, and then we have a downtown. So let's because nobody was thinking about building around downtown because when I grew up, downtown was very black.
Yes.
$15 a month apartments down here, one room apartments. There were many of those hotel apartments from downtown.
Let's move on. Go ahead, Norman.
But you know, if you look right now, in terms of what's happened in that area, you have a lot of Latinos that have moved in there. So these three African American candidates, whoever goes and woos the Latino community, has an edge on the other.
How many Latinos live in that community?
I know I was there at a party the other day. Okay.
You think there's more than 5%?
Yes, there are more.
So you see, Norma just raised something that no one is talking about.
Interesting.
There's
that
a
could
whole
be the
community out
vote.
There that probably no one is going out or reaching out to that they should go out and reach out to.
Ones with Latino last names who aren't Latino just put their names on the poster but not the picture.
And let me say, I don't know if Charlie does have a Latino background.
Well,
like, I don't know for sure, but I know all his Ash side of his family is black.
Yeah, Michelle.
But I think it's an issue of people aren't voting everywhere anyway. You know, I think there's apathy across the board when it comes to voting. And so we are not any different from anywhere else in the country.
But wait, within the city, there are huge differences.
There are
I mean, East Shore, Westville, 25 and 26, East Rock, 9 and 10, Babs is 28, and Beaver Hills. Those are high vote wards.
But they don't even turn out like they used to. They don't turn out like they used to. Voting's down everywhere.
But it's up on Pundit Friday.
Yes, everybody on Pundit Friday
votes. WNHHFM, your host for community radio, 103.5 FM, live stream, newhavenandpent.org. Patagonia!
Oh, my God.
Patagonia.
More outdoor stuff. Yay!
I'm not not understanding this whole outdoor.
I have so many questions. You know, we have in New Haven, we're going to have outdoor stuff and skincare stuff because there's a new skincare spot on Broadway, too.
Really?
So Patagonia, so there's going to be a Patagonia outlet. That's what the new store is going to be. I don't know if you've seen the guess what store this is going to be, where the old, what was that place, Emporium called, and where the Peabody 2 Museum was at?
It used to be Demery's when I was younger.
And it used to be the Aubon Paris pen. So
it was Demery's when I was younger.
And Broadway, the prime property gateway, the Broadway district that Yale's been trying to make over into the image of upscale chain stores, hoping to get like Shoreline Yuppies and everything. Right. They have that main store that keeps going empty. They kicked out a successful mid-scale business, despite the fancy French name, Aubon Pan. People loved it. It did well. They said, that's not fancy enough for us. It's not going to appeal to the image of shopper we want. So they kept putting stuff in there, these expensive chains. That
those things are all over Washington, D.C., by the way.
Nobody would
Boston
ever go
is loaded
in.
With
Markeisha
them.
And I used to text each other every time we walked by One Broadway to see if we ever spotted a human.
We never saw. We saw more people at the museum when it was the museum than we
but
ever
now
saw in that store.
To get Patagonia, which is outdoor kind of rugged.
Is there a market
clothing
for that?
Gear.
Really?
Well, we have two other stores right in the district, Denali.
And Trailblazer.
And Denali is going to run
the. So the owner of those two stores is going to manage that outlet. And combine Denali.
Are they
going to
have some different merchandise in the store?
But wait. They already sell Patagonia stuff. That's what's so weird to me. I'm like, what?
I thought
they already sell. Patagonia is a great outdoors brand. It's wonderfully sustainable, and they're like everything's made in America or
but
something
you have
like
to be
that.
Able to afford apartment in Winchester Lofts. The
but
shopper,
they
right?
exactly. But they sell. They already sell that brand in those stores. I
was
like, what is
Jim
happening? Or Jim Bean.
Jim
Bean. We wish Jim Bean was coming, but it's going to be the LL Bean.
LL Bean, same thing. You know, the drunk.
So that's in summer of 2018. So that's next summer. Next summer. It's going to be that big building that's right next door to Trailblazer, across from the Patagonia store. And then on top of that, we have an Origin store on Broadway, which is a skincare store. They just opened the Blue Mercury, which is a skincare store. It's called the Blue Mercury, I think. And it sells high-end skincare products. You can get that La Mer that's like $500 for face cream.
So I have two theories about that, Mark.
Go get some samples.
It's not like Yale's people don't know how commercial real estate works. So one theory in retail, right or wrong, they've also been wrong about some stuff. They thought they could just will themselves to make New Haven, Cambridge, or Paris, and then all the black people go away and anyone else wouldn't afford it. That didn't work.
Why don't they just put a Waffle House there?
You know, that would probably
I would eat there,
possible.
But I don't
chicken
think
and waffles. I dig
I don't think that's going to work. That's
but
not the type
case,
of customer they're trying to attract.
When you cluster similar businesses, they all benefit. Like when you have four.
New Haven has that theory for food trucks.
Right. And if you have three gas stations, two next to each other, it's not that you only then split half the market. People
you double
go
it.
There for the dinner or pizza. Mm-hmm. So the theory
like
might be that if this becomes because L.L. Bean, don't they? And I'm not a retail person. Doesn't L.L. Bean also sell outdoor wear?
Yes.
And,
yes.
That you, if
and this new
that,
place is going to be full on outdoors. It's almost
so
going to be like a REI.
If you're not going to buy online, which people do buy a lot of stuff online, if you want to go shopping for outdoor stuff and you know there's an L.L. Bean at Denali Trailblazer, and a Patagonia. You might, in fact, be more likely go there instead of the mall or to a single standalone store in a shopping district because you'll say, that's a theory, that it's all in one place. The other theory is, and I believe this has been the case in Audubon Street after Yale took that over, that Yale has so much money, they think the long ball. Mm. So whereas another company that owns a commercial strip can't afford to just subsidize, it's so funny who gets subsidized. They can subsidize these really expensive chains that don't bring them in the revenue and even give them no rent. We're not privy to their details. If they just want to control the real estate for the kind of people they want around.
Oh, yeah, that's
so
we
they
know
have
that.
More goals.
That's why you don't see any black businesses
investment.
Down there.
So in Audubon Street, you had all these empty storefronts or these absurd businesses that are never going to make it all these years there because it was more important to them to have the kind of people they want on their block. Yeah, right. Then what actually is going to pay?
That sounds
so the alternative,
evil.
No, I'll tell you the alternative.
But it's always been that way.
I'll give you the other example. The corner of Church and Chapel used to be called the 100% Quarter, right?
Right.
So those are upscale apartments put in by the Schaefer Real Estate Company a decade ago. Mm-hmm. And on the first floor was an empty storefront at the prime spot of downtown. Right. Now, for years, the city said, we want you to put an upscale place there. We're trying to change that block. But nobody would come in because any chain said they're not going to make the money there. And he wasn't Yale. So he couldn't subsidize them saying we could have pretend fairy land we want because we can afford to and then push other people out. So finally he said, just look, I got to get rent on this. I own it. I got to pay the bill. So Matt and Emerson see the economic military said, no, just wait. We want to get you this upscale chain, this upscale chain. No one want to come in. So he put a dollar store in because that was going to pay the bills. And the dollar store pays the bills and they get business. That can't happen at Yale-owned real estate, but it can happen there. Which is better? Is the market always a better dictator of how you develop a city?
But, you know, it also is,
But see, Yale is its own thing.
Like the 92nd floor.
Because they can subsidize what they want. So they, you know, even if it's unsuccessful, they can just let it go.
I hate to sell like the 92nd floor, but I hate to see a whole bunch of dollar stores in here.
Is that York Street?
Yeah, York and Broadway.
York and Broadway.
Yes.
My question is whether they're going to change the name York. Where did they get that name? Because I know James Stewart was from the House of York.
Here we go.
A big slave trader.
Yeah, here we go.
So what are we going to do?
Okay, guys, we're running out of time here. How is Vice, no, not Vice, Vanity going to do? The Russian lady playwright's been reborn as Vanity. Going to work or not?
Do clubs work in this town?
I have a problem with, you know, look, I think it's cool. It's great to have this. But here's a thing that I hope does not happen. And I know it's going to. Dress codes. Let's take off the word dress. It's going to be a lot of codes in there to keep people of color out of. And that's the problem I have.
I don't want no black people down there.
That's the problem I have with most of these downtown clubs.
They want white people to throw bottles of beer down from the garage on cops' heads instead.
Dress codes means black codes.
How about the tennis tournament? It's coming to a final end. Coming to final match this weekend. Marquesa Ricks has been down there at the tennis tourney. How is it? Is it fun? Are we getting crowds?
The first night was fun. Looks like it's some. The first night, the opening night had some pretty good crowds.
Yeah. Are we getting our $200,000 worth of public money?
I don't know about that.
Tell me about it.
Because everybody has free tickets.
All right, that's a good point. School starts Monday. Is it? What's
so
it?
Yes and no.
Any party school year thoughts?
Oh God, let it be over.
I'm glad I wasn't the first one to bring up Obama. Michelle did.
Because she said Obama's not running. And Obama's like, I'm glad.
Why would Obama lie, Joe?
What?
You know what? You've been listening to Pundit Friday.
Where we talk about squirrels and Obama. Random Obama theories.
Thank you for joining us on Pundit Friday, Dateline New Haven, community radio
Waffle
broadcast.
At one of I guess the that's a Russian FM. Thing. I don't.
Thanks to the best pundits in the media universe. Basra Al-Zaidi, Michelle Turner, Marquesa Ricks, Norma Rodriguez-Reyes, Harry Droz, and the man of many
drink.
Appellations. Enough to spend all day, all hour, so reciting
ugly.
Joe Ugly. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free. From the group CD, A Plea for Peace. Now we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book your flight and fly free with us all weekend long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.